On this week's episode, we've got our week four hashtag Know Your Enemy game of the week. It's another CUSA Sunbelt matchup. It's again in the state of Alabama. It's South Alabama UAB.
And we've got the Been On Sports Hustle Award of the week. I've got one that is going to just blow everyone's mind.
I'm waiting on it.
And we've got another round of athletic directors on the show. This time, UAB and South Alabama athletic directors on the show.
But of course, because it's our hashtag Know Your Enemy game of the week, as well, there's a lot of crossover with these teams. I got a lightning round that'll prove it.
Roll it. On the show tonight, we've got...
Every night was a battle.
You can lock this in, take it to the bank.
No class at all. It's unbelievable.
They should see a relatively quick turnaround.
Show me the money!
Big water slides, snow cone truck and everything.
One team stands alone.
Well, you know, what I think about Troy.
I'm losing my mind over here.
We've got the moment you've all been waiting for.
Of course.
Welcome in to another exciting episode of the Bench Boys Podcast. I'm Colin Cahill.
I'm Thomas Gleaton.
And we are the Bench Boys. And thank you, for one, just coming in and listening to our show. If you haven't already, smash the subscribe button. Give us a follow on Twitter at the OG Bench Boys. Yep, got it right. I'm at Colin Cahill 13. Thomas is at
Thomas Gleaton.
There you go. Simple
there
as that.
It is.
Follow him. He's got great takes on a lot of things.
Mostly chicken sandwiches, but you know.
Chicken sandwiches. Memes. He's got it all. So
cheeseburgers. It's cheeseburger day.
Cheeseburger day.
It's mostly food.
There you go. We love food here.
Anyway.
So if you haven't, just hit every subscribe button. We're on like literally everything at this point. It'll take us an hour and a half
Apple,
to tell you.
Spotify, you know, Google Play,
etc.
Basically.
Luminary, all these things.
You know, we love food. We also love college football. And you know what? There were some great games last weekend. Let's just go ahead and get out of the gate.
Out of the gate.
Out of the gate, let's just say it right here. Four people beat the Bench Boys this past week.
Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Because you went, what, 4-2?
Yep.
And then I went like 3-3.
Three and three.
Not a great week for me.
The thing is, nobody went undefeated.
Nobody.
So.
But we had four people. So congratulations to all of those people. One of them might have been my wife. I'm not.
I will let you handle that later.
That's the thing we're going to discuss at the home.
That's fine.
She's not running my fantasy team, so that's all anyone needs to know. It is me and only me.
I will make this comment. If she did as well on that as she would have done in fantasy, then it might be a good idea to consider.
I did lose this week in fantasy, so.
I'm just saying.
Not helping my cause. All right. Well, four people beat us. Congratulations to all of them. Let's jump right into the games. What game kind of jumped out to you this past weekend, buddy?
I think the Georgia State Western Michigan jumped out to me. I thought it would be more competitive. It just was not whatsoever.
I said Dan Ellington was going to be the guy, and Dan Ellington just didn't have any help. I mean, he had only 120. They ran the ball a lot better this past week, 210 yards of rushing. But the problem is they gave up almost 700 yards of offense.
Yikes.
Which,
that in any level, 600 yards of offense.
Whew. There was a lot of yards given up by Sunbelt schools this year.
Yeah.
This week.
Yeah, it's a great transition because our game of the week last week was a heck of a game.
It was a heck of a game.
That fourth quarter alone.
That didn't feature any defenses.
Nope. But, hey, look, Big 12 fans were excited about
it. Big 12 fans love that type of game. That's like a normal week for them, right?
Right? Yeah. Pretty much. So, basically, we have Caleb Barker throwing for a school record.
Ever.
Jack Abraham throwing for what should have been a school record. Mm-hmm. And six wide receivers catching for more than 100 yards.
Yep.
That's just incredible.
And no turnovers.
Yes.
Not a single turnover the entire game.
No. The one fumble was recovered by the team that made the fumble.
Yeah, there was two reviews, I guess, in the first one, and then there was another fumble.
Oh, you're right.
But they were both overturned, so there was no turnovers in the entire game
whatsoever.
So it was a crazy game. There was back to back kickoff
returns. Yeah,
I mean, just in 100-yard.
Didn't we bring him up last week, Jalen Adams?
Yeah, we talked about Jalen Adams, and Lord have mercy. I know Troy's kicker is a freshman, but you got to tell that kid. Don't kick it to him. Like, take the 35-yard penalty. Like, it just... That was such a swing in momentum.
You know what? Maybe he doesn't listen to our show. Maybe he doesn't follow Jalen Adams on Twitter. I get it. But, you know, it's not completely his fault. There's a lot of things that happened in that game. And I'm sure there's a lot to be discussed. I know Scott diagnosed it over on the Trojan Wall.
Yeah.
Shout out to them real quick. Was there another game that stood out to you?
To me, okay, yeah, this is the one. I forgot that we were going to talk about this, but Minnesota and Georgia Southern was a really good game.
Yes.
Minnesota really had that game most of the game, and Georgia Southern kind of came back in the second half, kind of found, you know, what they were looking for. And Georgia Southern led that game with a minute to go and had Minnesota at 3rd and 30 from their own 4-yard line. 3rd and 30. They get about 17, 18 yards on the third down play, and then they convert a 4th down to keep the drive going and eventually go and score and take the lead with about a minute to go in the entire ball. I mean, Georgia Southern literally had them dead to rights. Last drive of the game, there was in their own end zone. That 3rd and 30 started from the end zone. They were that close. And just, man, that would have been a huge win. I mean, somehow it's been so close right there. You know, yeah, we've had two, but, you know, we talked about ULM. Now we had Minnesota here. I mean, and Minnesota's been in close ball games every single game. But, man, that was a close game. Georgia Southern, their defense had glimpses of, you know, showing up like the defense we thought they were going to have.
They had a lot of glimpses because not only did they take the Defensive Player of the Year of the Week award, they also took that Mongwavian Brinson, that defensive lineman, took Special Teams Player of the Week. So that defense had to show up.
Yeah,
it kept them in the game.
It did exactly that. Minnesota ran the ball 48 times. For 93 yards.
Wow.
That's less than 2 yards a carry.
Yeah.
Georgia Southern's run defense showed up. I mean, they gave up 289 yards passing on 31 attempts.
Where was that against LSU? Like, it didn't exist.
Well, LSU threw the ball all over the place. Right. That was the thing with LSU.
But still, like...
But 48 attempts and you're only giving up 2 yards an attempt. That is impressive. This is the most impressive stat of the whole game. You remember how we talked about don't try to be what you aren't? Georgia Southern is a run the ball... win time of possession. Georgia Southern had the least amount of offensive plays called in the history of their program. 47 total plays on offense.
Total. That's like, okay, so there's 4 quarters.
Yep.
Let's round it up to 48.
Mm-hmm.
That's 4 quarters. They ran 12 plays. Mm-hmm. Per quarter. So each quarter had 12 plays. Each quarter basically had 3 drives. If you went first down, second down, third down,
mm-hmm.
and then got the first down,
mm-hmm.
that happened 4 times mm-hmm. each quarter.
They punted the ball 5 times. They threw the ball 9. They had 9 passing attempts and 33 rushing attempts for 42, and then they punted the ball 5 other times.
That's ridiculous. That is insane.
They only held the ball for 22 minutes. You can't, Georgia Southern can't, and they were still in the ball game, and they ran that few of plays. I mean, they go back to the board and they look at those stats and they get, man, we missed out.
Yep.
We really missed out. Yep. So that was the only other game that really jumped out to me. Louisiana, 77 points. I mean, that's going to jump out to anybody. But again, they're playing Texas Southern. It's a really bad team.
Well, you know what?
We'll get into them later.
We'll get into them right now because it's time for our Hustle Belt Hustle Award. Bet on Sports Hustle Award of the Week. I'll get them straight eventually.
I like it.
I am going with the Louisiana backfield. I know
just the whole backfield.
Yeah, well, okay. Yeah, 3 players in particular. But like, I get it's Texas Southern. But when you score 77 points, the most in your program's history, I mean, you got to get a shout out. Mm-hmm. Raymond Calais, 117 all-purpose yards, 88 on kick returns, and this guy and Texas Southern only kicked the ball off 3 times.
Wow,
he caught 2 of them. And got 88 yards on 2 kickoff returns. Wow. Like, I mean, yeah, one's 30, one's 50, but yeah. 88 yards on 2 kickoff returns. That's
solid.
Pretty solid special teams play. Keeping it going, TJ Wisham, I don't know what year he is, but he's a relatively newer back, 105 yards rushing all by himself. Which is pretty good. I mean,
wow.
It's Louisiana, it's what they're supposed to do, but he did a pretty darn good job.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Regis, the number one guy, had another 105 all-purpose yards, 96 yards rushing, 9 receiving yards. So those 3 guys get my Hustle Award of the Week from Bet on Sports for a total of 327 total all-purpose yards by themselves.
Impressive game.
Very much so.
Impressive game for them. I mean, I think they had like 400 yards rushing as a team in the game. They had like 700 yards offense. I mean, 300, 400 on the ground.
440 on the ground.
Yeah. 300 on the air.
Yep.
Yeah. There you go.
So
that was an impressive. I mean, you're supposed to do that to teams like that, and that's what you should do. Like, that's exactly what you should do to those teams like that. So, no, that perfect example of a hustle award. They hustled their butts off for that game.
Now it's your turn.
For my hustle.
I've been waiting all week for this because he has been literally texting me. You guys, you don't realize this. He's like, he's like, you got your person yet? I'm like, yeah. I want to make sure that it's not the same as yours. Mm-hmm. And he goes, trust me, it won't be.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So mine has been hustling for quite some time.
Yeah.
Mine has been hustling for 40 years.
Okay.
That's how much she's been hustling. She.
She
is head coach Karen Chisholm from Texas State, who has been the women's volleyball coach for the past 40 years. 40 years. And just this past week, she got her 900th win, which is...
Wow.
Yeah. Fifth. She's the fifth person across all NCAA divisions to do it at one program. Never left Texas State. Been there for 40 years. Won all 900 games at Texas State. That's you talk about...
Pat Summitt. Like, is up there.
There's a Mount Rushmore for probably people that have done that.
Literally.
And she's probably going to be put on that Mount Rushmore.
Absolutely.
Incredible. I mean, just here's some of the stats. She entered the 2019 campaign with a record of 895 and 550, which is a 72% winning percentage over 40 years, which is incredible. Like, I mean, incredible. She's the second active longest tenured coach at one school across all three NCAA divisions. I mean, everything. Like, football, everything. Like, any sport.
I mean...
just wild. She's also the second winningest female Division I coach in NCAA history. I'm pretty sure you just mentioned the only lady or woman that has more wins than her in her respective sport.
Absolutely.
Pat Summitt. Yeah. So, she is incredible. She earned her 800th victory, guess what, 5 years ago. She's won 100 games in 5 years.
We talked about that last season with basketball. That's insane on any level to win 100 games in 5 years.
Oh yeah. Yeah. She, I mean, just crazy. She's that made her the 13th coach in history. She's the 22nd collegiate volleyball coach ever to achieve 800 wins.
They won the conference title last year outright.
Yep. Yep. They were 15-1 last year. That's what they
15-1. And she's conference. Been doing this for 40 years.
Oh yeah.
Okay, you know what? You got me. I'm surprised by that. That is incredible stats.
Oh, yeah.
I'm all for it.
She gets my husband. And this year, they've kept it going. They're 5-5 right now, but let me tell you something. They've played a gruesome schedule. They've got a win over Georgia out of the SEC.
Okay.
Swept them.
Okay.
Didn't even let them breathe. So... They're 5-5, but they've played some very tough competition early on in the season. But no, she gets my hustle award. I mean, 40 years of hustling, and she did it. I mean, she's the seventh NCAA Division I coach to reach 900 wins in a sport itself. So for her to be at that university for 40 years, 900 wins, good for them. Good for you, Texas State Volleyball. You guys took the reins last year out of the Sun Belt. So, and this is a perfect example of why. We all know why. They have Karen Chisholm at the helm. So that is my Been On Sports Hustle Award of the Week.
Excellent.
Congratulations.
Pick. Excellent pick. More than congratulations. She's... I'm
900 wins is just wild to
me. I'm blown away.
I mean, that is... You are just used to it by now. Like, 900 wins, that is just... I mean, that's incredible.
Talk about some serious expectations.
Oh, man. And I mean, just think about how many players have ever played for her. I mean, 40 years, you're thinking there's probably 12 to 15.
There's at least one set of parent and daughter. That,
there's got to be.
Yeah.
There's got to be. Maybe there might even be grandchildren at this point. 40 years? Like, you never know.
Yep.
So, no, she's probably coached so many different people. And so, obviously, we aren't in the Texas State family, but I'm sure they're all like, yeah, this is nothing. Like, we've all known her for forever.
It's another Wednesday.
Yeah,
come on.
It's another Wednesday. She's another win. Like, it's okay. So, but yeah, that definitely good award. I knew I was going to get you though. You had no idea, right?
I didn't.
No idea.
You got
no
me.
Idea. I like it. I like it.
Well, now let's move on. Take a step forward. All right. It's time for our game of the week.
Know your enemy.
That's right. It's Know Your Enemy. And this week, again, we're staying in Alabama. We're staying with the Conference USA Sun Belt matchup. South Alabama and UAB. A lot of parallels between these two. They both have stadiums going up. They both have similar high school players. We'll get to that in a bit. They both have like just similar like records. They're both young programs.
This is the first time they've played each other though.
Yes.
Ever. Which is, I mean, UAB is not like a young program, but
right.
Everybody knows what they went through, mm-hmm. and then South is obviously a young program. So, this is going to be a really fun matchup for these two schools. So.
Absolutely. So, let's get it started on the South Alabama side of things.
And now we're joined by Doug Conkle, who I guess it's the Doug Conkle and the 247. I mean, basically the insider for South Alabama joins us tonight. First of all, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight, Doug.
I appreciate it, guys. Good to be here. And yes, I am the Doug Conkle because nobody else has applied for the job. So I'm the man by default.
Well, let's get right down to it. You know, we're going into game three for South here. Or is it game four? Game four for South. They haven't had a bye week. Game four for South. Just talk about, I mean, last week, obviously, Memphis was the looked just better. What did you see out of that game from the offense and defensive sides of the ball for South Alabama?
Well, Memphis is much, much better. There were a lot of people in college football that when they were trying to name the top G5 team, Memphis and Central Florida were the two most prominent names. So after seeing them play last week, I totally understand why. They're big on the offensive line. They're fast. They're physical. I mean, they got the whole package. That's a really tough team. That team's better than Nebraska. I don't think that's even a question. They were a really tough opponent. And South Alabama did not play very well. Although I'll tell you, I think on defense, there was, of course, some big runs they gave up. But for the most part, defense played fairly well. I think the coverage was good. Obviously, if you watched it, you saw some pretty bad bounces go their way when the ball was in the air. The run game should be tightened up, but I think the defense did okay. I think it got harder for them as the game went on because the offense was, I mean, pathetic is the word that comes to mind. It was simply awful. They couldn't run. They couldn't get any room up front. And that's because Memphis, in addition to being physically so dominant, didn't have to worry about the pass. I mean, honestly, Cephas Johnson had a terrible game. Morton didn't have a very good game. And I think with Cephas, we'll focus on him because he's going to be starting again against UAB. But Cephas is he's a guy who didn't play much quarterback in high school, and it really is showing so far in his college career. I don't think he's processing things very quickly. Some guys are born to it. I don't think he's born to it. Those guys who aren't born to it can learn it, and I think he's just slowly getting the hang of the game at that position.
Do you think Cephas is more of – he's just such a good athlete that you've got to get him on the field. Is that kind of the case of Cephas Johnson so far at South Alabama?
Well, you know, luckily none of us are football coaches and have to get paid or get fired based on that decision. But, yeah, he's such a good athlete with so much great potential. He's got a good arm. He throws it pretty accurately. But do you play him in hopes that he improves enough to be a difference maker and maybe lose games along the way? Or do you just say, I need to win now and find the guy you can win right now? I think – to be perfectly honest, playing into Cephas's hand is the fact that there's not a ton of competition for him. Tylan Morton, the junior college player, comes in and is a similar guy. They're both tall. They're both athletic. Tylan Morton has that nice high overhand delivery. But as opposed to Cephas, who's a guy who hasn't played much, Tylan played a lot of football in high school up here in Georgia where he put up tremendous numbers. But he's also a guy that I don't think is able to make his reads quickly and figure out where to go with the ball. Although at times it seems to me like he's really rushing when he's out there, whereas Cephas is sometimes letting open receivers go from open to covered because he's holding the ball so long.
Was last week's game, I mean, I know Memphis is, you were talking about how good they were, but was that, do you think they were going in that game as kind of a measuring stick game just, or is South not there yet where they would have viewed that as kind of a measuring stick kind of program game?
I don't think so. I actually think this week's game against UAB is that game. But I will say against Memphis, I don't think they thought they would be as overmatched as they were. And I think because last year they went up there and they really went toe-to-toe with Memphis for just about the entire game. But the difference last year was you had Jamarius Way, a wide receiver, and he was something that Memphis could not handle in the secondary. And you had Evan Orris, who, you know, as humble as as his career as a quarterback was, he had a great year. I mean, I think Steve Campbell has a really good quarterback-friendly offense, and a guy who just can make decisions and deliver the ball fairly accurately can do really well, and that's what Evan North did, and they put up big numbers. So I thought they had a chance at home after that experience last year, but it's a totally different team this year than last year. Better on defense, much worse on offense.
When you let's jump to this week. When you look at this UAB team, obviously last year they had Spencer Brown, and they kind of just ran on Spencer Brown's shoulders. And this year we really haven't seen that same Spencer Brown in the first couple of games, especially in the Alabama State game. That run game just wasn't there. What are you kind of expecting South to be able to do, against a running back like Spencer Brown?
I think they'll be able to keep him in check. I think he's been catching check the first couple of games, and I think that's because part of their effectiveness last year was a big offensive line, of which four of those starters are gone, and they're breaking in some new guys. They lost every wide receiver on that roster, and they had some guys ready to step in, some junior college guys, but they'd replay, and they lost a ton of talent. So you have Johnson, who's a really good quarterback, but he doesn't have a lot of weapons, and I don't think that the running game has a lot of room to operate in because of the offensive line that's being rebuilt. And look, I've complained about this online for the last 2 years. The NCAA did the biggest favor they've ever done for any institution when they gave UAB that allowance to bring in players and have them practice without using up their eligibility clock. What that allowed them to do was to go to junior colleges in specific and also some four-year schools and bring in players who were academically not able to get in school. They got them in. They had a year to not only practice, but to academically rehabilitate these guys. So that roster was absolutely loaded with a bunch of guys who could have played at P5 schools. And they've not all of them, just a few left, but most of them have graduated now. But that's why they were able to rise so quickly. The challenge for Bill Clark now it's going to be more of a conventional recruit, develop, win kind of a cycle. I think he's a great coach. I think he'll do it. But I think you're going to see a pretty big step back this year because of those huge losses.
Yeah, and the last question we've got here is we always ask, what if we wake up Sunday and the headline says South Alabama knocks off UAB, what's going to have to happen on Saturday in order for that to happen?
Well, the quarterback, who I assume is going to be Cephas for the whole game, he's got to have a good game. He's got to make good reads. He's got to know when to keep that ball in the running game, when to hand it off. I do believe we're going to see Trey Mentor out there from what I heard just a little while ago. So he's a difference maker for them on offense. I think they gotta be able to run the ball. I think Cephas has to make good decisions and get the ball downfield. And on defense, I think they have to do a better job of tightening up on the run fits so that Spencer Brown and company don't break anything big on him. But other than that, stick tight to the coverages, get some pressure on Thomas Johnston, and I think they'll probably manage to turn that ball over a couple times, which is what the one thing they've been really good at this year is getting turnovers. Get a couple of those, stop the run, and play well on offense themselves.
Well, thank you so much, Doug, for coming on the show. The Doug Conkle coming on the show tonight. Obviously, we will keep track of that game as it is our game of the week over the weekend. And hopefully you get some good seats at Legion Field.
I hope so, too, but there can't be a bad seat, right? Or at least there's a lot of availability from what I've seen in pictures. So I look forward to that. And thanks so much for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
I like really what he said about conferences. I think this is a big G5 game for Conference USA and for Sun Belt. Last week we talked about this. We had Southern Miss and Troy. I think this is another round. It's a boxing fight. We got nine rounds. I think this is another round for each of these two conferences. And there's a lot on the line here. The conferences take a lot of pride in their out of conference winning percentages, and they take a lot of pride in being able to say, we might not win the big Power Five games, but we got, a way better record against Group of Five schools. So I think this is a big game. I think either team could really win this game at this point in the year. So
I know. I agree. It's South Alabama's had this game scheduled for a while now. UAB has been looking forward to this game for a while now. And now let's head over to that other sideline and get our UAB expert, Steve Irvine.
And now we're joined by Steve Irvine, a radio analyst for the UAB Blazers and also a longtime writer for the Birmingham News and for AL.com at one point. The guy knows his stuff as a UAB insider, been covering them for at least the past decade at this point, or longer, actually, I should say, but in 2005. First of all, thank you for coming on the show tonight, Steve. It's definitely a pleasure to have you on.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. I've definitely been looking forward to this.
Well, let's jump right into talking UAB football. You know, the first week was a kind of, I don't want to say cringeworthy, but you had you guys on your toes with an Alabama State squad that came up there. What was kind of the initial reaction to that game? I mean, it was a nail biter.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't what everybody expected. And it kind of talks about a little bit where this program's come. And, you're talking about, before Coach Clark got there, even in Coach Clark's first year in 2014, a win was a win was a win, and it really didn't matter what the scoreboard said, as long as you get the win out of it. And the expectations are, obviously are a lot higher these days. And so people were upset. I mean, not upset, but they were concerned, after the close game. But, hey, it's, when you lose 35 seniors from last year and most of them had a big role, got a lot of new guys and, new expectations of what is expected out of guys. And it's just, it was first week. And the most important thing is, and you can't forget this, it was a win. And they had a lot to build on, a lot to learn from that.
What was the biggest, you guys were on a bye week this past week. You had Akron 2 weeks ago now. What was the biggest, improvement that you saw? What did you see? What was the biggest difference between this UAB team from game one to game two?
Well, I think one of the things was they caught balls, and they caught, long passes, and they didn't make, big mistakes. You look at that Alabama State game. There's a drop touchdown pass by Myron Mitchell. There's a long ball caught by Jonathan Hayden that if he holds on, he ends up fumbling about the 10 or 15 or so. And, if he holds on there, they probably go in and score there. And there was another play. I don't remember what the other one was. But there was like three plays that if they make them, that's a whole different game. That's 21 points right there. And we wouldn't really be talking about, how difficult it was. And I think in the Akron game, they made those plays. I mean, they caught the ball. There was one drop touchdown pass by Kendall Parham, and he came back on later in that same drive and made an incredible, beautiful catch for a touchdown. So they made, they made the plays that they didn't make the first week. It wasn't really a whole lot different, to be honest with you, the performance. It's just they made some key plays, which they didn't do against Alabama State.
You talked about expectations, being risen because of obviously the what happened with the conference championship and you guys winning that. But Spencer Brown, I feel like his expectations were very high coming into the season. What is that just really high expectations or kind of what's been going on with Spencer Brown in the first couple of games?
Well, that's a good question. I think first and foremost, you haven't seen it yet, but Spencer Brown is better than ever. He really is. He's faster. He's healthy, he's stronger, and he's always been strong, but they haven't been able to show it yet because just circumstances. One, the offensive line is new. Basically they lost four all-conference starters. All four of their starters they lost had earned some sort of all-conference mention. So that's big right there. And then teams are lining up to take them away. I mean, and that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Now, last year they did too. That's one thing that, that is not being said right now is last year they did too. You'd be crazy not to line up and try to take Spencer Brown away. I mean, especially last year because, AJ Early wasn't a great passer and Tyler Johnson hadn't proven himself, until late in the year. And that offensive line was so good last year that they lined up to take it away and they, our offensive line said, I don't care what you're doing, we're going to run. And that's where this offensive line has to get to, but it doesn't come overnight. It doesn't come in the first week or the second week. It's going to come eventually because this offensive line, it can be good and will be good, but it's just not going to happen right away. And I think that we're all just waiting for it to happen. And I know Spencer is, and I know Coach Clark is, but it's going to take a little time. But when it does, you will see that Spencer Brown is better than ever.
Let's get to this weekend, UAB and South Alabama. It's obviously a big group of five matchup between Conference USA and Sun Belt. I feel like there's a lot of pride in between the two conferences now just to notch a win against each other. And, last week we had Troy and Southern Miss. And this week we get UAB and South Alabama. How big a game is it for each conference, do you think? Specifically, you know, you're representing UAB, so how big a win would it be for Conference USA this weekend for UAB to get that win?
Oh, huge. I mean, I think it's huge. I think that there's no doubt that both conferences look at each other and want to be better than the other and think they're better than the other. And you know, when you're talking about future, you know, even when you're talking about future movement and within conferences, you want to prove that you're the better conference and you want to prove you're a better team in those conferences. So maybe you'll be able to move into an American or whatever, you know, down the road a little bit. But I think it's huge. I think it's huge for a lot of reasons. One, in-state, they recruit against each other. They want to prove that they're, you know, they're that top non-Auburn program, you know, and same with Troy. I mean, I wish UAB and Troy, I mean, obviously Troy and South Alabama play each other every year, you know, in conference, but I wish there was some way that UAB could, you know, that all of them could play each other every year, because I think that's great for the state. You know, I don't know that UAB folks would necessarily agree with me, but I mean, that's the way I feel, but I think it's huge. Yeah. I mean, it's huge in a lot of cases, and there's so many kids that, you know, ties in between the programs that mm-hmm. you know, I'm really excited that they're playing. And when they scheduled it, I was really excited about it, because I think it's just a natural rival type game that would be good at, you know, play every year.
Mm-hmm. And then Steve, the last question that we asked everybody, you know, Sunday we wake up, you know, the headline says, you know, Blazers knock off the Jags. What's going to have to happen Saturday in order for UAB to come out with a W?
Well, I think they're going to have to either run the football well or have, you know, throw the deep ball well. I mean, I think that's when, you know, South Alabama has to give them one. The way they line up, they're either going to have to, you know, dare Tyler Johnson and the receivers to beat them deep, or they're going to have to line up where, you know, the running game is going to have to start clicking. So I think it's going to have to be one of those two things. You know, whatever is given to them by alignment, I think they need to take full advantage of. You know, and I think, you know, defensively, they just have to keep making plays. I mean, I think defensively has been one area that has been a little surprised, because there's a lot of new faces in there. But I think that they have to win the line of scrimmage on defense, and at the win line of scrimmage on offense. And if they do both those things, you know, I see big things happening.
All right. Well, perfect. Well, Steve, thank you for coming on the show. Obviously, we love getting insight about programs outside the Sun Belt. And I think we learned a lot about, I don't think a lot of people knew about the 35 seniors that UAB lost last year. Any program that loses that many, it's going to be tough to just stay on that level. So, but again, thank you so much, Steve, for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. This was fun.
So he said Spencer Brown was bigger and stronger than last year. We just haven't seen him because of the offensive line, mm-hmm. which it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It's just a little baffling to see that you've got a player that talented hampered by something, you know?
Well, I mean, we hit on it, the expectations. I think it's Alabama. When you win a conference championship, I mean, it's the same thing with Troy. We won a conference championship in 2017. We expect conference championships. And yes, UAB is a young program. And, you know, he even alluded to it too early on in the interview, that saying, you know, this is still only a four-year-old program since we've had the reignition of this program. And so, but people expect it. I think Spencer Brown has those same expectations of, okay, he just ran for, what, 1,400 yards last year. That's a normal thing for him. Well, when you lose an O-line like what they did, and then you lose 35 seniors, you're going to take a step back. And it's going to be that's a lot of production that they lost. And I think they're seeing that over the first 2 weeks. But luckily, they've had a bye week. They had Akron. They were able to get some guys, move some guys in. So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting weekend for them.
No, I agree with you, especially on the Akron note. I went through Akron because Troy is playing Akron this weekend, and it mm-hmm. was UAB's most recent game. Just seeing some of the stats, it was definitely a tune-up game for UAB. It's mm-hmm. going to need to be a tune-up game for Troy, but we're not talking about Troy this week. We'll get off of that. Akron was just enough for UAB to figure out what it needed to do and what adjustments it needed to make going forward this season. So now let's take a little bit of a turn, something relatively new. We got the ADs again this week.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to get Joel Oderman from South Alabama, and we were lucky to get Mark Ingram from UAB. Both, I think, personalities.
Absolutely.
I
love it.
Both of them were kind of just like how last week, you know, you kind of had a more not saying Brent wasn't professional. He was very professional, but more kind of an upright type guy in Jerry McClain, and kind of a more laid back guy in Brent Jones. I think that's kind of the same way.
No, you're right. Because Joel, when I talked to him, I mean, he was very, very tactful, very polite, very professional. But he wasn't as laid back as Brent Jones. Oh, no. I'll be straight with you on that. Mark had a little bit more fun. But that's also a bit of content there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because
and we're going to get into that.
The story this week, and it kind of goes along with both of them, both schools are building a new stadium, either on campus or near campus, for the football team. And that's a huge thing for both these programs to be getting something so large. So let's go ahead and jump right into it and go with our first guy, Mark Ingram.
First of all, thank you for coming on the show, Mark. You've had a busy couple of days talking about something that not a whole lot of people thought would ever happen, but we're talking Komodo Dragons, I guess. Is that the talk of the town in Birmingham when it comes to UAB athletics?
It apparently is. And thank you guys for having me. This funny little idea has turned into a nationwide story. I mean, it was on ESPN's Around the Horn. It's been picked up by Sports Illustrated. It was on Yahoo Sports. It was on the Apple News feed, Reddit Sports, and now you guys. It's been picked up by a lot of people. It's just an idea that we had. So I came here. I'm in my fifth year. I came here about 4.5 years ago from Temple University in Philadelphia. And Temple is, they are the Owls. That is their mascot. And we had a partnership with the local zoo, and they brought an owl, an actual live owl, to all of our football and basketball games. It was a lot of fun. It was this big, beautiful, very sturdy bird, and she sat on this perch, and you could take fans could get near her and take pictures with it, and fans loved it, and it was just a nice, fun thing for the fan base. Well, so flash forward, I get the job at UAB. And we're the Blazers, but our mascot is a dragon. And it just hit me. I thought, oh man, we could do a similar partnership with the Birmingham Zoo, and maybe they could bring out a Komodo dragon. Well, I didn't tell anybody this idea. I just kind of had it. Well, I guess I'm on the job 2-3 weeks, and I'm walking through the office, and somebody who was working here at the time had a meeting with a person from the Birmingham Zoo. And they said, I was just walking by, and they stopped me. Hey, Mark, come here. I want you to meet this person from the Birmingham Zoo. And I said, oh, hey, how are you? And good to meet you. And I said, hey, you know what? Actually, I've got this idea I want to share with you. And he says, okay, what's that? I said, well, Philadelphia, Temple Owls, bird at the game. What do you think about bringing a Komodo dragon to our games? And he looks at me like I am just absolutely crazy. And I said, what? And he says, yeah, he said, you know, they're basically like alligators, right? And I said, no, I just thought they were big iguanas. I mean, that's really what I thought. I did no research. I mean, full disclosure, it's not like I researched these things. And so I said, no, I didn't realize. I said, well, okay, what if we put it in a cage? Because I know that, Memphis, for example, and LSU, they have tigers in their game in cages. I said, what about that? And he says, well, that would help, except for the spit. And I said, what do you mean the spit? And he says, yeah, they spit this poisonous venom that causes paralysis in their prey and slowly stops your heart as it leaches into your skin. And I said, what? And he says, yeah. He says, they're vicious animals. And he says, the paralysis, it causes paralysis. And, that way they can take their time when consuming their victim. And I said, so this is a bad idea, I guess, is what you're telling me. And he said, yeah, it's a bad idea. But I had not at the time brushed up on my Komodo dragon factoids the way that I should before bringing this up. So yeah, I told somebody else in an interview 2 weeks ago who asked about it. I guess it had been talked about on social media, unrelated to me, and he asked me about it. And so I told the story, which I'd never told the story, I guess, and it has blown up. It's the best I can describe it. And yesterday, I went and visited the Komodo dragon at Birmingham Zoo. His name is Matt. He's 15 years old, 200 pounds, and it was a lot of fun. There, the Birmingham Zoo is a beautiful zoo and something that we're proud of in our city. And anyway, we just had a lot of fun with it.
So for the fans out there, the odds or the chances that one Saturday this year, probably having a Komodo dragon, probably very slim at this point after doing all this research.
I will tell you that anything is possible. That's where I'll say that anything is possible.
I love it. Well, yeah, I mean, it's just crazy kind of what catches on social media. And obviously this is just taken off. And I mean, I guess, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity. And this is that good publicity, I think, you know.
I guess, you know, here's what's funny to your point. 2 years ago, we reinstated football. And we play we reinstated it 4 years ago. But 2 years ago, we play our first football game back, 2017. The night before the first game, we do a free live concert in a parking lot, which is now the home, and we knew it at the time, it's the site of our new football stadium, which is now under construction. So we do a live concert with a guy named Sam Hunt. Sam Hunt at the time is probably the hottest act in music anywhere, and he happens to be a guy who played football at UAB. And a lot of people don't know that. So Sam Hunt played football at UAB. He does this free concert the night before our first football game. It's this huge event. It took a ton of work, all this execution, and it was fantastic. It didn't get nearly the national attention that this Komodo Dragon thing has gotten, and we didn't actually do anything with Komodo Dragon. We just talked about it for a couple of minutes. That's it. So that's what's wild about it. I didn't bring a Komodo Dragon to the game. We just said, what if? That's it. What if? No, that's a bad idea. That's it.
You know, we're down here in Mobile, and we've been covering a lot of the expansion of South Stadium, and you guys were kind of, I think, about 6 months, maybe a year ahead of Mobile. What has it kind of been like for the university and the city of Birmingham working together and getting the stadium built?
So that's a terrific question that we could fill hours on probably, but the city of Birmingham has been working on this project for 25, 30 years. It's interesting that the reinstatement of UAB football reignited the discussion, which is thrilling. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun to be a part of. It's certainly not without its own challenges, but between our city, our county, a group called the BJCC, which is the Birmingham Jefferson Convention Center, the private sector, all these groups coming together to make this project happen from a funding standpoint is really remarkable. And it's going to be this fantastic economic driver to downtown Birmingham. It's going to be great for the city. It's going to provide new funding sources for the city to go do other great works with it, you know, from a tax dollar standpoint and so on. And so it'll make a great economic impact on Birmingham. But, you know, obviously we're elated to have the opportunity to be a part of it and to get a brand new modern stadium with all the modern amenities that we've all come to appreciate at pro venues, for example. It's going to be just fantastic for all of our fans, and I'm really happy for our fans. You know, fans who have been with us since, you know, 89-90 and watching us play at Legion Field, and which this year Legion Field is in its 92nd year of hosting games. It's seen a lot of great football, and you know, but our fans certainly have continued to go out there and support us at Legion Field. But you know, this is a great opportunity for our fans, and they certainly deserve it.
All right, well, Mark, well, thank you so much again for coming on the show.
We really appreciate it. We're glad we got to learn about a Komodo dragon tonight. I don't think we've ever had a dragon talk on our show.
We'll talk about giraffes next time or something.
We'll get you on for there. Well, sweet. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Anytime.
Tonight.
Anytime. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, anything is possible, I guess, when you got a guy like Mark Ingram. I mean, yeah, I've never met Mark Ingram, but literally just talking to him for the last 20 minutes. Gunslinger kind of guy. Like, you know, I'm going to pull something out of the hat type of guy. I kind of want to go to the game now, which I guess that's what he's trying to get people
to do.
That's
the whole point.
Come to the game.
Yeah.
And if a Komodo dragon shows up on Saturday morning when they play that ball game, you talk about like just going viral. Like, absolutely, they're going to go viral. To me, I hope it does. I hope that somehow get it done. I hope they do it safely, very safely for the animal, for one thing, because you don't want to mess up the animal.
Right. And you don't want people hurt either.
No, you don't want the people hurt as well. But hopefully, I think it would be amazing if they get it done. But just again, just kind of like last week, you know, with Troy and with what they did on social media, UAB did it again. So I guess South Alabama is next week. Something crazy will happen with South Alabama. I don't know what, but there'll be some like Jaguar that gets on campus or something.
Well, I mean, yeah, historically that happened. So
it could happen again. Who knows?
Well, let's find out, shall we? And we're here with Dr. Joel Erdman, the athletic director at the University of South Alabama. Thank you for coming on, Joel.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You don't mind me calling you Joel, do you?
No, I prefer Joel, believe me.
Okay, absolutely then. So the big thing with y'all right now, the big thing with South Alabama is this stadium that y'all are building and will be built next year. I got to ask you, what is the first thing you plan to do in this new stadium?
When it is done and we have a certificate of occupancy, I'm going to exhale and take a deep breath and think of it. I mean, it's really true. It's going to be a tremendous experience to know that it's ready to go. But my thoughts will be with deep appreciation for literally thousands of people who have invested their time, their money, their thoughts, their professional input. This process and this road has been a 5, 6, 7 year deal, and so many people have touched it that I think when that day comes, it's got to be pure gratitude to those people that helped make it happen.
And what do you think it mean? What does this mean necessarily, like in the grand scheme of things? I mean, I know it's a new stadium. I know it means a lot for your football team, but as the athletic director, as an achievement, what does this mean for you?
Well, it as an alumnus, you know, I earned my master's at South Alabama in the 90s and have a deep love and respect for the university and our community. And from that point of view, this is a statement. Hancock Whitney Stadium is a statement of continued progression of the university. It's a statement of continued evolution from what used to be a commuter school in the 70s and 80s that has, you know, blossomed into a more traditional campus with more residential students, with a tremendous academic offering and a health system. And so it's that next logical step in the development of the university, our alumni, our students. And yes, it is a football stadium. And yes, its primary mission is to enhance the football program. But in the larger, grander scheme of the university and the city of Mobile and the region of South Alabama, it is a statement of a huge step forward to push everything forward into the next 50 to 100 years.
I got a couple more questions for you. Real quick, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about this. recently the AD at UAB, Mark Ingram, has been bringing up rumors of them bringing a Komodo dragon to campus.
Whether or not that comes through
is beside the point, but at one point, South Alabama did have a live jaguar mascot. Is that even a remote possibility on your radar?
Not at this time. And I think it would be a tremendous novelty. But let me qualify my answer. When I was AD at North Alabama, I was there at the beginning of a process where at UNA they had a series of lions, and when the lion passed away that left an opening, that's when I got there, and one of the vice presidents inherited the mission of bringing another lion to UNA's campus, and It is, for that type of an animal, which a jaguar I think would be very similar, the requirements for humane treatment of animals requires a lot, and it's a very, very pricey process, and takes a lot of care and a lot of affection, which is great. I'm an animal person myself, but that day might happen at the University of South Alabama, but, you know, I think we would have to build a jaguar habitat. You might not be allowed to have one by itself. And you're talking 24-hour veterinary service, 24-hour nutrition service, security. It's an abundance of complexity that not a lot of people have really seen. So the Komodo dragon, that might not be as bad, but a jaguar, I think, is going to be a little high maintenance.
No, I agree. I just, you know, journalistic duty, that kind of thing, I got to ask about it. And one last question for you. Colin wasn't able to join me on this interview, but, you know, he's got roots at South Dakota State. You've got roots at South Dakota State. You got to pick right now, South Dakota State or your Jags this year. Who you got straight up?
Oh, Jags, 100%. Always.
As if it was going to be any other answer.
Yeah, I love my alma mater, and you know, I had an amazing experience there, and I'm proud to be a Jackrabbit for my undergraduate experience, but 100% Jags. But when the Jackrabbits are playing the Bison out of North Dakota State, yeah, anybody else, the Jackrabbits I got to go with.
Any other day. I got you. I completely understand. Well, thank you, Joel. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for coming on.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
South Dakota State. So you gave me that question.
Yeah.
I had to ask him. I, you're right. It's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
South Dakota State against North Dakota State, but the Jags straight up.
I mean, I understand. You're the AD. You got to pick.
You got to say what you got to say.
I just like it because, you know, the first time I think I ever met him, we got to talk, and he said he was from South Dakota, and I was like, oh, you know, my mom, my family's from up kind of close to there in Iowa, and we got to talking, and he's like, yeah, I'm a South Dakota State alum, and I was like, no way, my mom's a South Dakota State, so I got to give a little love for the Jackrabbits, he told me, he goes, hey, you know, you're a Troy guy, but the fact that your mom went to South Dakota State, that gets you like about 5 or 10 points. So you're good in my book. So Joel, I hope I'm still good in your book. But no, just you got to give some South. The Jackrabbits they're not doing bad this year. They almost beat Minnesota early on in the year.
They did. They got
a solid quarterback. He's just a little young, but they're looking good. So they're a team that we keep up with a little bit. I keep up with them.
Right.
So.
I love those little teams. Yeah. I love.
You got to keep him on his toes, you know.
Oh, of course. Keep him on his toes. Of course. That's what I did with the Jaguar question. So.
Yeah, there you go.
So we've been through this whole thing talking about everything we could basically talk about. But now it's time for something that a little deep dive that I did this week. And I can't take all the credit for it. But let's just go ahead and kick off this lightning round.
Lightning round.
That's right. It's the lightning round. It's another segment that I like to bring back. It's good. We're going to have some fun with this one. He's already laughing. That's a good sign. So, South Alabama, UAB, obviously they're going to have a lot of overlap because mm-hmm. they're both teams in Alabama. We talked last week about Troy and Southern Miss having overlap because mm-hmm. of some things. Well, just this week, Stacey Long with the Montgomery Advertiser
yep.
put out the list, probably the ultimate list of 2019 prodigal sons, the Alabama, the high school football players from Alabama who play at a FBS level school.
Okay.
So five teams in Alabama take the top five spots. Okay. You want to go ahead and I'm going to get you to guess which team is number one. And I'll give you three chances, but I'll tell you where they land.
So like which team?
So which team has
the most Alabama players?
Yes.
Like high school players from Alabama.
From the state of Alabama. And we're going the top. I'll give you three guesses and you've got five choices to go from. So number one team from the state of Alabama with the most state of Alabama high school players.
Troy.
They're number two.
Number two. South Alabama has a lot of kids from Mississippi. Auburn?
They're number four.
They're four. Is it UAB?
It is.
UAB
is UAB. Very good. UAB is number one
okay.
with 67 players. Troy is number two with 57 players. South Alabama is three with 50 players. Auburn and Alabama follow up in four and five with 47 and 46. Fun little bit. The next two teams from the state of Mississippi, no surprise there, Mississippi State and Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
The number seven team, I can't even count. The number
seven.
Number eight team, excuse
eight.
Me.
Okay.
I can't count. Number eight team is Navy. Navy has 11 Alabama players.
Really?
That's more than any team outside of Alabama, the state of Alabama, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss.
Well, that's the drop off from six or from five to eight is 47 to 11.
46 to 15 from Alabama to Mississippi State.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big drop.
It's a huge drop.
I guess if it's got to be FBS schools.
Yes.
That's what. Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
So I mean, we're not counting Alabama Georgia, State. You know, we're not. Yeah. Georgia has.
They probably got like
four,
five.
Yeah, four. Southern Miss has 10. LSU has 8. Memphis has 9. Clemson, Florida, Georgia Southern, Middle Tennessee State, Tennessee, and Tulane all have 7.
You know, I mean, it makes sense that the G5 teams have more guys. I mean, Alabama, I think, is growing into being close to the top five of states when it comes to high school football. I think early 2000s, they were probably in that 15 range of, you know, 15 to 20 range. I think I definitely think we're at top 10 at this point in the country of when it comes to the quality of high school football in the state. I think we're definitely right there.
I haven't looked at the numbers for that yet, but
the obvious three, I think, are Florida, Texas, California, mm-hmm. and then Georgia is right there. I think Georgia might be up with California. I think mm-hmm. Texas is one. I think Florida is one, Texas two. It might be a 1-1A type deal. And then I think three is California and Georgia. Georgia has got a lot of talent.
But you've also got New Jersey, Louisiana.
Well, Ohio is up there. I think Ohio has kind of dipped a little bit. But I really think Alabama is coming. I don't know if they're in that top five, but I definitely think they're in the top 10 of the quality of high school football that is played in the state. You go look at NFL rosters. I mean, Alabama has got the state of Alabama. All those guys might not have gone to college in Alabama, but they have quite a load of talent in the NFL from the state of Alabama right now. They might have arguably the best player in the NFL right now in Julio Jones.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's definitely a top five guy. So, but no, that cool list. It doesn't shock me that I know you're not done yet, but
yeah.
Just early, just by those numbers, it doesn't shock me just because of those teams rely on in-state talent. You've got to go, and they go and they find some diamonds. We've seen it at South, we've seen it at UAB, we've seen it here at Troy. They go and they find those diamonds in the rough that might not get recruited as, you know, by Alabama and Auburn, and they go and they get them, and they fill their rosters with guys like that. So,
well, and the next step is tying this into our game of the week. UAB and South Alabama, number one and number three in the state with in-state players. there is such an overlap. 39 players on both teams either played with another player from that high school crossed the line there.
Okay.
So Charles Henderson has a player on UAB and South Alabama's roster. James Clemens has one on both. Jemison Huntsville, both. McGill Tulin, it's a school in Mobile, they have one on UAB and four on South Alabama's roster. So you go down the line and you've got 13 high schools with a player on both UAB and South Alabama's rosters. And the 39 total students make up that entire list.
Wow.
It's just a crazy
amount. Some of the other high schools? Just wondering.
I'll just go down the list. I said Charles Henderson, James Clemens, Jemison Huntsville, McGill Tulin, Muscle Shoals,
yep.
Opelika, Pell City, Ramsey, Saraland near Mobile, Spanish Fort near Mobile, St. Luke's in Mobile, St. Paul's in Mobile, Thompson.
So, outside of James Clemens out of Huntsville, Ramsey, Charles Henderson, and
Thompson.
Thompson's out of Birmingham, so that makes sense. But you talked five teams out of Mobile.
Five out of Mobile.
And then you've got at least three out of Birmingham, maybe four out of Birmingham.
Opelika is not in Birmingham.
Opelika is Auburn.
Charles Henderson's not in Birmingham. Troy. Or Mobile. James Clemens is Birmingham.
I think they're Huntsville.
Okay, well, that's one. Mm-hmm. Jemison Huntsville is in Huntsville.
Yeah.
Muscle Shoals is in...
That's North Alabama. North Alabama. That's like North Alabama.
So you got five or six that are... Not in Birmingham or Mobile.
So that's a pretty cool little stat right there. I mean, I like the Mobile. There's a lot that just talks about Mobile. A lot of talent out of Mobile.
Players just from Mobile. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 from McGill Tulin.
Wow.
3 from Saraland. 7 from Spanish Fort. 2 from St. Luke's. 3 from St. Paul's.
Wow.
So obviously Mobile is a major, major port for both these two teams.
Wow. Cool stats.
Thank you.
A lot of talent.
Absolutely.
A lot of talent in this state, and we see it every Saturday when we watch Group of Five, just how deep this state is. I mean, Thomas Johnston for our game of the week, the quarterback for UAB, I love Steve Irvine coming out and saying, the guy might not do it pretty, but the guy's going to win ball games. Let me tell you something. Thomas Johnston didn't lose a game in high school. He literally was 35-0 in high school at Spanish Fort. That's an unreal stat, like, right there. I mean, they've got really good players all over the place. Anybody that's coming out of the McGill Tulin program is good, and we've seen how good Thompson has been in the past couple of years. So it's really cool that these two programs, South Alabama and UAB, have a lot of these guys. And that just makes the game itself, because all these kids grew up playing each other. I mean, that's fun to see them. There's bragging rights. I mean,
absolutely.
Big-time bragging rights.
Absolutely.
When you've got these kids that grew up playing Pop Warner and, you know, Pee-wee football together, and now they're here and they're playing at Legion Field this weekend in a college football game. I mean, on is this game, if I'm right, is this game an NFL Network game? I'm pretty sure.
I believe it is.
Yeah. So I think with that, let's get in to our best bets.
Best bets.
And yep, it's best bets. And, you know, we're going to kick this right off with the game of the week, who we've been talking to for the past, 40 minutes, basically. Who's going to win what? What you got? Who have they convinced you to flip your? Did you have your decision already?
I did have my decision already made, and it didn't really change. And the team doesn't look that good this year,
mm-hmm.
but compared to what I've seen, I guess, from the other team, I just have to lean toward UAB. Mm. There's a little bit more talent there. There's a little bit more development there, and it's probably going to be closer than I expect, and I hope it's closer than I expect, but I don't expect it to be close, and I expect UAB to win.
Yeah, there's two games that kind of are telling of why I picked who this week. And last game was Memphis. And I know Memphis is a lot different team than UAB is. But South gave up 312 yards of rushing to Memphis. And if you're just going to let – and 45 carries, they average 7 yards a carry. That's That's bad. And they still had two turnovers, and they still they had two turnovers, and they still won the game 42-6. I think UAB finally finds out who their O-line is, and I think Spencer Brown really has a really good day. And I think Thomas Johnston takes a little bit of revenge on a team that he grew up in high school watching. And I'm going to pick UAB this one. I think just if USA, if South would have shown up, would have scored at least 24 points last week, I would have felt a lot differently about, one, their offense, and then, two, their defense. And I just, they just didn't look good at all. And I understand it's Memphis. But the other game that makes this kind of tough for me was how UAB played against Alabama State and just the struggles they had. So that it's going to be really telling what UAB team we see, but I still think UAB pulls this out.
The UAB team against Akron wasn't that great either.
Mm-mm.
I mean, they put points on the board and they padded stats, yeah. But
I do think they're giving South 10 points here. I think South covers. I think South keeps it within 10, but I don't think they get the win. I think it's like a 38-28 game, I would say. 38-30, something like that. Yeah.
All right, let's head up to North Carolina, where we've got the Mountaineers and the Tar Heels. The app fan vote right now, App State 71. We got Zach Thomas and company and Eli Drinkwitz versus Mac Brown and his Tar Heel company. Who you got?
Well, Mac Brown has had kind of a revelation there, I think. Like, you know, a lot of people were like, everybody's hiring the young coaches, and here comes North Carolina hiring a 70-year-old guy, I'm pretty sure. He might not be 70. I think he's in his late 60s, maybe 70. But Mac Brown might be 70, but they've got a freshman quarterback there in Sam Howell. That kid is the real deal. Six touchdowns on the year. He's above... I think he's right around 55-60% passing, 700 yards passing. They've played three good teams. They kind of got dealt a hand that the Saints get dealt, and they got screwed by the refs last weekend. They should have had one more play. Literally, they had 1 second on the clock.
You're right. I agree with you there, but you know they had that ball for 14 seconds.
But they beat a Miami team. They beat a good South Carolina team. I think North Carolina has been tested way just so much better in the first 3 weeks than what App State has been. And App State has played basically no one. Charlotte put up, 40 points on them 2 weeks ago. And that just wasn't a good look. 41 points, and they played an ETSU team that just wasn't good. I think North Carolina is just the better tested team. I think this is a high-scoring game. I think this is like a 45-40 game, but I think North Carolina comes out on top. It's a three-point advantage to North Carolina. So I'm going to go North Carolina on this one. Early on, I really thought App State could do this, but I think Sam Howell's grown up for North Carolina, and I just think they've been better battle tested at this point, and I think they're just better. They're more ready for this game. But we're gonna see a lot about Eli Drinkwitz as well.
And you've changed my mind on it too. I was gonna go with App State. Now I'm going with North Carolina as well.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's a Power Five team versus App State, and you're right. App State really hasn't played anybody.
Yeah.
Let's keep moving up the coast. Coastal Carolina at UMass. Fan vote says Coastal 85. I kind of like that. I'm going with Coastal as well. This UMass team is just meh.
They are meh. And, man, I love Coastal this year. I don't know why, but their social media, just they're juiced. They're coming. They've got the Kansas win. They got everything going for them. They played pretty well last week. Did a nice blowout win. Yes, they played Norfolk State. But UMass has just not shown up. I think total... They haven't scored more than 21 points in a game yet this year. Held to 21 against Rutgers, held to 20 against Southern Illinois, and held to 17 against Charlotte. And so UMass just isn't the team that they were. They just aren't there. And so I think Coastal on the road, they're a 17-point favorite. I think they cover as well. I think they win and they cover the 17-point spread.
I like it. Let's go to the West a little bit. Louisiana is at Ohio. The fan vote says Louisiana 89, but that's a pretty strong showing of who follows us and who listens to our show. I have to agree with them, though. Ohio wasn't impressive. They were okay, but they weren't impressive against Marshall last week. And Louisiana, yeah, they didn't play anybody, but they played their hearts out the weeks before.
Yeah, that was one of my games that I missed. I really thought Marshall, I'm pretty sure I picked Marshall last week. I think that was one. Or did I pick Ohio?
You picked Ohio.
Oh, I picked Ohio. So they lost that game by 2 points. I really thought Ohio would show up. I really like Nathan Rourke. Got to see him play in high school down here in Alabama. There's another Alabama player in FBS. This is really confuses me that Ohio is a 3-point favorite. Other than the fact that this is probably a toss up, and that the fact that it's at Ohio, they're getting 3 points. That's the only thing that can make sense for me, because I think ULL could win this game by 10 points. Now, the only way they do that, though, is if they have that three-headed monster that you gave a hustle award to earlier in the show. If they can do that, and if they don't turn the ball over, and if they can just not give up more than 200 yards rushing in this game, which I think they can, I think ULL could win this game, and I'm going to pick ULL. It's pretty much a toss-up even on FPI. It's 52-47, so it's a lot closer on FPI in the matchup predictor than it is in our fan vote. And obviously, like you said, it kind of reflects who follows us here. I think ULL. I think ULL gets this win. I think they're a little bit more physical of a team. And this is another big game. This is MAC Sunbelt. So this is one of those games that we're going to come back to maybe 2 months from now and say, well, that was a good win over another group of five opponent. So I think ULL gets the win.
Let's stay in Ohio with another MAC team. Troy's taking on Akron. Fan vote, Troy 85. And I got to say, after last week's explosion against Southern Miss, you got to think that there is very much no ceiling for this Troy offense. I looked at Akron. I dove into them for the Trojan Wall. You can check out that article there. But basically, this Akron defense, some of their stats aren't as good as Campbell. And Troy put 43 up on them. Right now, Troy's averaging 42.5 points a game, and Akron just does not look good defensively. The only thing they have, the only bright spot, is that Cato Nelson kid at quarterback. Mm-hmm. He is just like Tyler Johnson. He makes plays. Mm-hmm. He makes people miss when he runs. He's mobile. He's effective, and he can throw on a dime. Like, he is absolutely deadly accurate. The problem is, I just don't see any other weapons on that Akron team whatsoever. I got Troy big.
Yeah, Troy played Akron 2 years ago in 2017. It should have been a cakewalk, and it was a trash game where Troy had to score in pretty much the last possession of the game, and then relied on a defense to not let Cato Nelson, because he was still there in that game. He was banged up in that game, actually, and he played in that game. And we had to rely on a defense. This year, I don't think – obviously, we've seen Troy's defense isn't the same. So Troy's going to have to score 45 points in order to win this game. The thing is Akron kind of plays right into Troy's problems, is the fact that they throw the ball. They average about 250 a game, but they don't run the ball at all. And we kind of saw the same thing out of Southern Miss last week. We talked about that. Southern Miss doesn't really run the ball. I think this is going to be a little bit closer game than what people think. I think this is what game in my preseason predictions that I thought Troy would lose. It's a long road trip. It's a plane ride. It's the first plane ride. It's a coaching staff that has to go on a plane. I think Troy wins, but I don't think they cover. I think this game stays a lot closer than what we think. And it's just because at this point right now, and I know Southern Miss has a lot of weapons, but at this point right now, I just don't have a lot of faith in the defense right now. And any defense that gives up 690 yards of total offense in one game, or 650 yards, however many it was, it's just hard to put a lot of stake into that defense. I think Troy wins, but I don't think they cover.
Quick correction, it was Thomas Woodson was the quarterback in 17 for them.
Nelson wasn't the backup?
Nelson was not the backup. He really? Did not see playing time as far as I'm concerned, as far as I know.
Interesting.
I'm going to disagree with you there. I don't think this Akron offense is capable of putting 600 yards up on Troy.
Sure.
So I don't think it's going to be as close.
If they do, we've got a lot of problems.
Anyway, let's move out further west. Georgia State and Texas State. This one got a heck ton of votes on Twitter. What is it up to now? 190 something?
189
votes. 189
votes.
Texas State's running away with it 77%. But I'm not sure I want to go with that. Here's the thing. Both defenses are pretty decent. I mean, well, they're supposed to be.
Pretty decent.
Georgia has the better... Georgia State actually has a semblance of an offense behind Dan Ellington. And Texas State has none. So I'm going to go with the team that actually has more positives than just averages. And I'm going to go with Georgia State.
Yeah, FPI predictor has Texas State winning this game, 53-46, 53% chance of them winning. This is another, I think, a toss-up game that they give 3 points to the home team. And Texas State is a three-point favorite. I think last week has really skewed what people thought of Georgia State because of just how bad Georgia State got beat last week by Western Michigan. But Western Michigan has an offense. Texas State doesn't have an offense. I mean, they're averaging 12 points a game and 300 total yards a game. I mean, they're 24 yards rushing in their first that's what they're averaging in out of their first three games. That's not good. They're 0-3. They haven't tasted a win yet. Georgia State has tasted a win. Granted, they got punched in the mouth last week. Their defense gives up a lot of yards, 288 and 252 on the ground. Texas State doesn't put up those numbers, and they aren't going to put up those numbers in this game. It all depends on how healthy Dan Ellington is. Dan Ellington isn't 100%. We saw that last week against Western Michigan. How healthy is he going to be? I think this game is close, but I think Georgia State wins it. I think they cover just because it's such a low cover at three. But I'm going to go Georgia State as well.
All right, well, let's head even further west. We got our only out-of-conference game, Utah State and San Diego State, the Mountain West matchup. Honestly, it's split on the fan votes.
Literally, 50-50.
50-50. Here's my thing. I like Utah State. I like their quarterback a lot. Utah State, I was high on them last year, and they brought their quarterback back this year. So I have no reason to stop doubting in them. San Diego State hasn't been impressive this year, but so I'm going to go with Utah State.
Utah State comes in the game 1-1. San Diego State is 3-0. I'm pretty sure the game's at San Diego State. If I'm correct, yeah, it's at San Diego State. Here's the thing about San Diego State is they haven't been impressive. Their offense hasn't been impressive. Their defense has been impressive. Their defense is only giving up 8 points a game in the first three games.
Okay, but who are they playing?
UCLA only gave up 14.
Meh.
The first game was Weber. Yeah, Weber State. They won that game 6-0, which was...
6-0.
Yeah.
Over Weber State.
I'm talking about their defense. I'm not talking about their offense.
Fair enough.
And then they played New Mexico State last week.
Meh.
31-10. So, yeah, their offense isn't explosive, but their defense shuts people down. They're giving up less than 250 a game. I mean, that's still pretty good. And you played a Chip Kelly UCLA team, by the way. I mean, I know UCLA's in, like, shambles right now. They still went out and beat UCLA. And Utah State, they lost to Wake 38-35. And then they played Stony Brook. I mean, I'm going to go back to my first, to just like how the first game was of this, of our pick-ems, was they really haven't been challenged. And when they were sort of challenged, they lost. Coincidentally, Wake has beaten both the teams in both of those descriptions. They do average a lot of yards. I mean, this is strength against strength this week. Utah State, 656 yards. That's what they average a game. I'm sure the Stony Brook game probably skewed that number. But they're playing a really good San Diego State at home. It's a 4-point spread. I'm going to pick San Diego State for this one. I like them. I like the Aztecs. South Alabama has a history with
the Aztecs. That's literally the only team we disagree on.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. We're leaving it to the non-conference game of all games to decide what happens.
When you know, you know.
Yeah.
And so, if we screw up any of these pretty badly, give us a shout on Twitter at the OG Bench Boys, at Thomas Gleaton, at Colin Cahill 13.
Yep.
And you can find, go ahead and smash that subscribe button if you haven't already. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Luminary.
Everything.
Yeah, yeah.
At this point.
We're everywhere. If you can't find somewhere, let us know. We'll be on there soon. You know what? I'm pretty good.
That's all I got.
You know, we didn't even mention that thing.
What thing?
Come on back.